Season 7, Episode 7 of Why Work. And if you've made it this far, then you're well and truly halfway through this season of Why Work. And if you've only just joined us, and if those techno algorithmic gods have sent Why Work your way and you don't know about us, then can I suggest you go all the way back to Season 1, Episode 1, Bubbles of Trouble. You'll never go back to any other podcast. Now, back to the action. Season 7, Episode 7, a beautifully shambolic disaster. And a warning, this episode includes discussion of a workplace fatality. We advise listener discretion, as always. Artificial intelligence, AI, is off its tree, protests Trage. This stuff is dangerous. It's hallucinogenic. A beautifully shambolic disaster. Society must put the rails on it, Trage explains his experience of AI. Tested 3 times, the AI spat out different versions of the same facts. It tested quite poorly. Rail industry is discussed, involving the dismissal of a long-standing employee who tested positive for a banned substance upon his return to work from leave. The crew turned this upside down. Listen in for more. Why Work podcast, a series of playful legal dissections on the most curious and alarming events in the world of work. The podcasters Alan Girl, Trage Svetkovsky, and Sarah Pazell debate how to craft a better experience of work. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And remember, none of the things we talk about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work.
Well, Alan and Sarah, staying on the theme of AI, I want to talk to you about just the hallucinogenic effects.
Wait, man. Of course you do. Of course Trage wants to talk.
I see AI and I think LSD. This stuff can be dangerous in the wrong hands, and I warn my students quite dramatically about it. And this thing is out of the box. And I warn our listeners, whether they're students or practitioners, especially practitioners, negligence, lawsuits, here we come.
Do you wish you were a prosecutor again, Trish?
Oh, yeah, I'm itching. I'm itching, aren't I? But let me just, this is spooky. There's a case, and at the moment I'm doing a paper with a colleague. It's finished. It's going to be submitted tomorrow on the shambolic state of industrial manslaughter and reckless and negligence provisions across Australia. It's just so inconsistent. Consistent. It's mind-blowing, but not as mind-blowing as what I'm about to tell you. During our research, I harped back to one of the cases that I did when I was a very young criminal law student. That was the case of Hodgetts and Jackson. It's a seminal case, it was a pretty important case in the 90s on what criminal negligence means. And in many respects, it's a workplace-related case, and I'll give you the facts really, and the facts are very important. Very, very important. The facts are very simple. They involved 2 apprentice butchers and they put the can of Coke on the ledge near where the alleyway was for a homeless man to consume this can of Coke. But the can of Coke was half poured out and they put meat preservative in the rest of it to top it up.
Oh, that's sad.
It was a practical joke, like a bit of a hazing or a prank back in the day where your initiation rite as a butcher back in the day was you'd have to drink this awful stuff and you'd be sick, but you wouldn't die.
Right.
But unfortunately, unbeknown to these 2 boys, was that this fellow had a pre-existing heart condition.
Oh, no.
And he died. Oh. So they were prosecuted for negligence. Section 289 of the Criminal Code. So essentially, manslaughter. So
I'm waiting for the linkage to AI. Come back to this. Yeah. Help me here.
So here's the linkage. So I have to give you the facts. The facts are important. 2 apprentices, can of Coke, consuming.
A prank. To somebody in the community.
And someone's dead.
Who was disadvantaged, a vulnerable person in the community.
Yeah, but that's too much detail. Just someone's dead. That's just someone's dead. So I put into AI, tell me the facts of Hodges and Jackson, please. I find myself saying please to AI. That's all. I didn't say give me the case.
You're a polite AI user. Yeah. I hear you.
Please tell me the facts of Hodges and Jackson. So remember the facts?
Yeah, got it.
It spat out the first time around. Hodges and Jackson were employed by a company that operated a ghost train ride at a show. Hodges and Jackson, and it gives you the correct citation, it deals with criminal negligence, and here's a summary of the facts. That they were on a ghost ride, and one woman died. There were no women in the real facts. One woman died because she was struck by a ride. So
that'd be a great case.
I know.
So I repeat,
yeah.
Tell me the facts of Hodges and Jackson. The next case, the next example was, I won't read it out, was two people were at a party. This time sex wasn't identified. Two people were at a party and they gave another party goer some alcohol to consume and she choked on her own vomit.
Ew.
Sort of getting close. Party. Ah, party's in a case. Party. But AI used the word, I presume, party.
Sorry. Can I just clarify? Was this another AI mode? Another.
Same software.
Same software. Just gave you a different answer now.
Yep. And then the third one involved a person choked on. Getting closer. A person choked on a piece of meat and died. Right. Not once were the facts correct.
Right.
And I've warned my students, particularly those who are studying law, that is just an out-and-out lie. So to rely, that is what I call hallucinations. That is AI off its tree. And that is very dangerous for practitioners.
And so I'm so glad you said that, Trish, because I'm working with Live Mind. I mentioned this last time, Live Mind AI, Lachlan Phillips, and he helps craft closed domain decision-making support systems. So what does that long terminology mean? It means that you can regulate the content that you want it to draw upon. You can vet it, you can validate it. So it's so much more reliable and reflects what you want to achieve. And it learns with you, and you have a process, like any good iterative design process, of checking the validity of what it's referring to. So you can control documents that go into this Perfect. Database. You can control sites where it can draw information from, like a legal research Yep. database that you say this is worthwhile, Yep. right? So he crafts that with you and helps shape it and design it properly, where you have an ongoing continuous quality improvement process.
Yeah.
Because too often we're just hearing about that phenomenon that you're talking about.
It makes you wonder whether, as AI starts to feed off itself,
yes.
whether some of these hallucinations will get worse and worse.
Oh, yeah. New life.
To add to the mind, so I did a typo in, I think, second or third round, and somehow waste was included in the instructions, and then suddenly it went off on a tangent and started talking about the waste from, what did it say, like the waste outcome. It suddenly created its own science, and waste outcome concerns, despite the court recognised a potential problem, some would be convicted for carelessness. This is called waste outcome. I'm speaking gibberish because AI has just spat out gibberish. This stuff's dangerous if you know what to do with it.
And as I just mentioned in Alan's previous case, we also have to make sure that there is some design for diversity in the AI, and that we're not funneling it purely on prejudicial bias of what we include in there. So you want to vet that, but then you want to challenge it from multiple points of view, just like we would do in any good design process, is make sure we understand a situation like a crystal held to the light and look at different light refracting. So try and make sure you've got a real robust way to examine whether or not that's the kind of information that would be seen. And we talk in workplace, would it be the worker, the maintainer, the operator, the legislator, the regulator, the superintendent, the manager, the whatever? Are we really being comprehensive in our thinking? And so that's a feature you can build into some closed domain decision support systems.
And you're right. So whatever your colleague's doing.
Twice today I've been called right by you boys.
It's fine if you can put the rails on it. If you put the information
rails
in.
Or reins?
Yes, you're creating the architecture.
I thought you were talking about Sarah claiming.
Oh, no, we have Google.
Put the reins on it, Sarah.
Oh, no, good luck. Sarah. Good luck with that.
Good luck reining in Sarah. Off you go, mate. You try and rein in Sarah. Yeah. But the thing is, guardrails, You input that information and you've got it in a contained system. You've got it. You've wrapped an iron cage around it, because if you rely on the information,
open source, open whatever, source, open domain,
you are risking lots of stuff.
Okay, so Trace, have you got a new court case for us, or is this AI lead you into, or maybe the hallucinations lead you into some drugs?
No, well, I am going to talk about drugs. Oh, look at that. What a segue. Well, ba-da-bum-bum-bum-bum. She don't lie. Cocaine. Notice Sarah's got absolutely. Do not take Sarah out on any music trivia night. You will lose spectacularly. She didn't even know that. But you
knew
that.
I just started laughing.
That's because she's younger. She's much younger.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's right. She would know about Eric Clapton. You would know about Eric Clapton, of course. I want to talk about cocaine on the theme of drugs. And I'll talk about marijuana as well and cannabinoids a bit later.
It's just because I'm very innocent on these topics, boys.
Of course you are. Of course you are. That's right. You're from South Australia. Okay. Very innocent people.
The collective soul.
She's from South Australia.
I'm from California.
Oh, California. Very innocent. California dreaming. Wonder what that song's about. Anyway, I digress. Sort of. Cocaine. Who is on top of the recent case involving a New South Wales train operator who tested positive for cocaine?
Tell us about this rail industry. I've been doing a fair bit of work in the rail industry. I'd like to hear about it.
Yeah. So, literally, this case, it involves Sydney Trains. I'll give you the citation in a minute. The driver tested positive. And can I just say, a long-serving driver, 26, lots of years of unblemished service. And that's so really important.
Dedicated service, yeah. A dedicated worker, long history, career investment in the industry.
Pushing 3 decades of competent workmanship.
Right.
Workpersonship.
Just floated through that.
What?
You just floated through.
No. We're still going to go through this. Anyway, the case involved the application of drug or alcohol and drug testing policies and random alcohol and drug testing. As we know, we've talked about this on the show before. The case simply involved a worker.
And so it's called fitness for work testing oftentimes, right? Are you fit for work, right?
Yeah, fit for work.
That's a much broader concept.
Yes. But oftentimes I think about it differently, but a lot of people are thinking about just purely in terms of the shift starts and have you got any influences, chemical influences, not permitting your fitness for work. There are many other ways to define fitness for work, but that's one of the umbrella terms.
Yeah. Before I tell you the facts of the case, make no mistake that this employer had a very clear drug and alcohol policy because of the nature of the work, i.e. driving seriously high risk items of plant, i.e. trains.
Yeah.
Make no mistake, it was clear. There was nothing vague about it. Now, if I said this to you, and indeed when I say you, I mean our readers, if you tested positive,
listeners,
subscribers, readers,
all of them, the lot, if I said to you, this is a very clear breach, zero tolerance, and you test positive, what's the obvious outcome of that scenario?
Oh, suspension and loss of work.
Yeah.
Loss of job.
You'd at least have to justify what that result might reflect.
An investigation triggers an investigation. Suspension.
Yeah, I'd be put my prosecutorial hat on. You've undeniably violated the policy, mate.
You're out, right?
Well, there can be.
You're positive for coke, buddy.
There can be explanations.
Have you watched, listen to my little friend, have you watched Al Pacino in Scarface? If you haven't, listeners, watch the movie. Coke is coke, man.
I was waiting for a Cheech and Chong reference or something there.
No, that's later for the marijuana.
Okay,
but all right. Coke is coke. I mean, listen, and I don't mean coke.
Okay. All right. So he got the positive result.
Now, can I tell you the facts? It wasn't at work. He was on leave.
But it was still in his system?
Yes, you're stealing some of my thunder. Wait a minute. Well, okay. It was on leave. Yes. I think ahead. It was
all
in his system. However, he had said, yes, he had tried coke for the first time and that it had been a few days before returning back to work, verily believing that it would be out of his system.
Yep.
I'm no expert, but maybe not. Anyway, the point is this. He tested positive, so he was dismissed.
Oh, that does seem a bit harsh.
Why, Alan?
No, come on. He's got a 26-year unblemished record.
Oh, stop it.
One bad incident. It wasn't like he'd taken it that morning.
Let me repeat, Sydney Trains had a drug and alcohol policy requiring
employees... I want to hear what Sarah has to say.
...to be drug-free.
No, I'm interested in what Sarah has to say.
I was just going to say that I have heard, traipsing around, doing my work in ergonomics and human factors, I've heard workers tell me that in quarries that they choose to go work at council or government, local government quarries, because the unions won't permit the drug testing at the time. So all the ones that get kicked off private entities go work in local government quarries. Now, it may have changed. It may have changed, and it doesn't necessarily, I'm not saying which council or where, may have changed, but at that time, there was a trend for operators, truck drivers, you name it, folks that worked in quarries, machine plant operators.
Well, you can't leave it hanging there like that. I mean, Trace is looking for some weekend work. He might want to go and work in one of these council quarries.
That's right, you know, cost of living. So, look, what's the point then in the sanctity of standards? What's the point in Australian Standard ASNZ 4308, 2008, where there are prescribed cutoff limits? Right. And if you beyond that threshold...
I think you have these limits to trigger an investigation. You always have to ask, do you have an explanation?
He does.
And then you always have to consider the explanation.
Here's the explanation. Given I was on annual leave and not due back to work until Sunday, 4th of June 2022, I believed that by that time it would have been out of my system. This was a mistake in judgment and one which has had heavy consequences. So remorse is there.
Did it go to court?
It absolutely did.
What happened? What did you the court decide?
He got his job back.
Hey, do you hear that, Sarah?
He got his job back. You're right.
But is it right? And I'm going to throw this out to my listeners, our listeners. Is it right? Because, and that was the case of Goodsell. It was recently, we can give citations to our subscribing listeners and those who download, because Sarah always tells me it's not enough just to listen, you need to download, correct, Sarah?
Well, I'm wondering if cocaine is illegal in Australia. Is it a prohibited substance?
Oh,
generally?
My God, Sarah, you need good legal advice. this is what happens when you live in
California. I'm assuming this is prohibited, right? This is prohibited in Australia.
It's prohibited everywhere, man.
The reason I'm asking is we have talked about job roles where you have a reputation even to uphold outside of the workplace also, right? And so if you want to represent yourself as a responsible operator of heavy machinery, using this example, what does this represent when, hey, you party hard and you are ingesting prohibited substances?
Correct.
Okay, so like the school teacher who has been caught out, we've talked about in the past, with some, you know, curious behaviors. We've talked about all kinds of sports heroes. We've talked about different workplaces where the bounds of your work are not simply on your clock in and clock out time. You know, could the head of this unit, for example, go out and, you know, let their hair down and party hard and not expect some repercussions,
you know,
in their job role? So that's what I'm curious
about.
Yeah,
that's a really good point. You've just reminded me of a decision I read when I was in England about a barrister who was partying hard, who casually admitted that he had partied hard and taken an ecstasy, an E, at a rave, and he was struck off because of his lifestyle and because there was Section 5 of the Barrister's Code of Conduct about public confidence and trust and taking illicit drugs, obviously not in court because he was at a party, was deemed to be in breach of
Can I tell you about how many doctors I've heard of, shall we say, who party hard in the local city scenery and are known
to
take to take cocaine all the time.
It's illegal.
Well, right? you're in the party part of the state.
I just live.
That's where all the parties are.
I live vicariously through other people, man. I sole parent.
Oh, you're like a contact high.
I work hard and sole parent, but I just hear all these stories. I live vicariously through these party lives of others.
Have you got a random drug testing policy at your work?
You should.
At Viva?
Yeah.
Yes.
At your business.
Yes. At my business, a little contract firm. Yes. We don't random drug test.
Oh,
well. So all of the people
who are looking for that place, that's right. Like I said, the truck drivers, the mobile plant operators that need to go find that place, right? Like the city government.
This conversation we need to have, the reason why I want to talk about drugs a lot today was pretty much in the same month, another decision. So that was a New South Wales employee, this time a Brisbane employee, was dismissed for failing his drug test and took legal action.
A city council employee, sorry?
No, a stevedoring employee. So again, operating high risk item of plants, big machinery, and for prescribed cannabinoid usage. So irrespective of whether we're talking about illicit drugs, cocaine, or prescribed, the point was he did test positive and he lost his case. So the thing about this issue, it's unresolved. It's confusing for stakeholders, for employers. And like I said before, the only certain thing about the court process is it's pretty uncertain. You just do not know where the pendulum swings.
So even when you pull cases to set precedent and say, look, precedent's been established here. I'm citing case, you know, Alan Girl versus Trace Tchaikovsky, 101, 5.3, right? So you guys cite all these cases and try to develop a cogent argument based on how it's been tested in the past.
Yeah. So,
and then it depends.
The reason why you look at earlier cases is it helps in making sure that your decision is a reasonable decision.
Yeah. Yep.
So you look at what's been done in the past.
But it's because it's so adversarial.
Mm.
And the point I make is here we have a case that did go in the favour of the first case I discussed. But on this occasion, this person did return what they call a non-negative result, i.e. tested positive. We're talking about different things here. However, the point was the policy was very similarly drafted to the train operator's policy. The tolerance will be zero.
Sometimes it comes down to the facts, though. Sometimes the distinction can be in the facts.
And did that...
Look, it can be, and of course, sorry to interrupt, but with the facts were a long-serving worker, unblemished record, etc.
Mm.
The Brisbane case didn't descend into that. But what's irrefutable is, this isn't really about the drugs. This is about the policies in place.
And did that policy say, we do not permit any illegal behaviours inside or outside of work? So that's what I was looking at before. If they simply say, if you're convicted for something illegal outside of work, you know, you're not permitted.
That's
this
a really good
job.
Case because I gave you the case about the barrister where there's that public perception. A policy wouldn't, well, Alan, you correct me if I'm wrong here. If it's a work-related policy about illicit substances in your system, which could impair judgment.
Operations.
Should a policy include You need to be a very sensible, solid citizen. Like I don't think it should, Sarah.
The upstanding citizen with salmon in his pocket. The teacher with salmon in his pocket.
So
right?
No, you can say to your workforce that your behaviour outside of work can be as important as your behaviour in work.
Well, interestingly, both these cases didn't descend into that level of detail. So because it was about being, you've stepped foot into work, you've done the random drug test and it's come back with a reading that's unfavourable. But you've opened up something, Sarah, about outside of work. So if you're at that, if you're the lawyer partying at a rave or if you're doing perhaps other things.
The school teacher that was found shoplifting.
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, lawyers have been struck off the roll for vomiting in the gutter.
Class. I'm just talking about
I'm going to get into this.
The average worker.
You can be a convicted felon and become president of the United States, or you could, or Barnaby Joyce was found drunken and lying in a gutter, right? So do we uphold the same standards for different job roles and who has the money and political sway?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, what's good enough for our political leaders should be good enough for your average worker on the street.
And vice versa, right? So you think...
Yeah, so the reason I mention that is that one went one way, one went another, and of course, Melanie, as you rightly correctly pointed out, the based on the facts and the antecedents. But for me, I guess I'm just trying to reconcile, you know, that both workers had a responsibility to not attend or perform work with a level of any drug within the system that would result in returning a positive test. So it's getting back to then, what's the point of having these standards or policies if and when they're challenged, they may be wildly different to what the policy intended. So it's something, Sarah, you always talk about, like, you know, once things are really tested at that pointy end, well, these are serious tests. And now if both of the cases had have returned, they got their jobs back, I think, wow, okay, there needs to be a serious review of how policies are looked at. But one did, and one didn't.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the facts are different. They all turn on their own, and maybe one set of lawyers perhaps were more cogent. Indeed, in the first case involving the cocaine, forensic medical evidence was led to show that the amounts in the system were so small and so insignificant that they wouldn't affect a train operator. I think it's important to consider. But the other case didn't go into that detail, but it often people are very, I guess, caught up or hung up on, but we've got this policy or this person tested positive. What do we do?
And what's coming to mind here is, no matter what you can look at academically by looking at these cases, there is a real human element. So this train operator, for example, this is now in the public domain. Right?
Mm.
And workmates would know about it, and relationships strained, and everything feeling awkward. And so you've got this invisible tribal culture that you've got to manage around these type of incidents. So when something's investigated, it requires, you know, I'm assuming a certain level of discretion, a decorum that's maintained, somehow to maintain some respect and dignity in the process and the people who are involved. Because I've seen, for example, school teachers falsely accused of things and put off work while an investigation's underway. And that has completely changed the optics. The optics matter in social relations, right? So even though they're reinstated,
can completely change the person too.
The person, the people around them, the relationships, the dynamics, their sense of self-efficacy, competence, you know, and the sense of organizational justice, right?
Yeah, it's people are, it's a complex process.
It's a human impact, right?
Yeah. But anyway, I just thought I'd mention that one because it just, it seems to be very much life because, and a shout out to Mano at Office of Industrial Relations, I did do a workshop a couple of years ago now about what type of policy should one have when in terms of alcohol and drug testing. And I was umming and ahhing, but because, well, not one size fits all, and now the case law corroborates that.
I think you just wanted to sing the song about cocaine, Trish.
Ba-da-bum-bum-bum-bum. We'll end it on that. Da-na-na-na-na-na. She don't lie, she don't lie, she don't lie.
Do we need to pay commercial rights for that?
Cocaine.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Why Work. You've been listening to Trage, Sarah and Alan, and if you'd like to know more about some of the things we've talked about today, please subscribe, and we'd be more than happy to provide you with information, names of cases and other things that may interest you. Please be aware that none of the matters we've talked about today should be construed as legal advice or any other type of advice. We're just here to talk about all things related to work. See you next time.